B. Collins. Peter B. Collins, news and comment. It's Thursday, January 25th, 2018. The Democrats have seriously miscalculated, leading to capitulation on DACA. The Dreamers are not thrown under a bus. They're thrown under the wall. Today, the Democrats capitulated further by ending their government shutdown with absolutely nothing to show for it. Well, there is the extension of the Child's Health Insurance Program. But beyond that, the key demand was a deal on DACA, relief for the Dreamers who have been turned into hostages when Trump canceled arbitrarily the federal order, the presidential order that had been put in place by Obama. And today, Dick Durbin, the number two Democrat, said that Democrats are willing to drop their demand that relief for Dreamers be tied to any long-term budget agreement. That was the leverage that they had. And because of the dysfunction in the Republican caucus, particularly in the House, the so-called Freedom Caucus, that backs away from these budget deals, the Democrats have really sealed the fate of immigration policy. And relief for the Dreamers will only come, I believe, when Democrats agree to pay the $25 billion in ransom for these hostages that will go to pay for the idiotic and useless southern border wall that is Trump's wet dream. Now, there's a lot of work to be done, and we've got 2 weeks until the next budget deadline. And things could shift. But I believe that the Democrats have really bungled this badly. They had the Republicans over at least part of a barrel, and they have yielded to the hardline Republican stance that we won't talk about immigration until we have a budget deal. And this is truly, truly distressing. And Trump is piling on to this by playing good cop and bad cop. Yesterday, he popped out of John Kelly's office and in less than 2 minutes spoke to a gaggle of reporters before he hopped on the helicopter to go to Andrews Air Force Base for his trip to Davos, Switzerland. And Trump offered two misdirects in that brief encounter with the media. The first one related to the Dreamers. He said that he is open to the idea that they would be on a path to citizenship. Now, being open to something is not a commitment. Mitch McConnell used similar language that, he would consider holding a clean vote on DACA. So what Trump said, over a period of 10 to 12 years, somebody does a great job, they work hard, that gives incentive to do a great job, whatever they're doing, if they do a great job, I think it's a nice thing to have the incentive of, after a period of years, being able to become a citizen. Now, that's quite a word salad. But this is the cynical approach. This is Trump thinking that he is performing the art of a deal. And we have all been, not all, most of us remember that he falsely said that Mexico would pay for his wall. But he's demanding $25 billion, says that he can build it on the cheap. And this comes at a time when they're also fighting over the budget issues related to throwing even more money than the White House requested at the Pentagon. In order to appease the hardliners in the House and Senate, negotiators have already agreed to a massive boost to the Pentagon's budget. Multiple sources say Congress would raise military spending by at least $70 billion. $80 billion in fiscal 2019. This comes on top of the increases that were larded on, over the past year. Again, with no demonstrated need, just this vague notion that our military is broken And the only way to repair it is to spend billions and billions of dollars and shower that on the military-industrial surveillance complex. Democrats fight for parity. They don't even say, this is ridiculous, we don't want to put more money in the Pentagon. They never talk about cutting the Pentagon budget. They go along with defense increases and then just say, well, we need parity for domestic spending. And I think that exposes the real core of the Democratic leadership. My old friend Nancy Pelosi has always said, budgets are about our values. They reflect our values. Well, this is a particularly ugly reflection on the values of the Democrats. And on immigration issues, as Trump kind of drops that misdirect, he loves those dreamers, doesn't he? Well, his embattled Attorney General, Jeffrey Beauregard, Jim Crow Sessions III, sent out nasty letters all across the country yesterday. Here in California, they landed in San Francisco, Berkeley, at the state capitol in Sacramento, and 20 other jurisdictions across the country. And the threat is, if they don't hand over documents related to their communication with federal immigration authorities, if they fail to respond in a complete and timely manner, the department will subpoena those documents. So it's just another threat. And Jeff Sessions says that it's so plain and obvious and common sense to him. Protecting criminal aliens from federal immigration authorities defies common sense and undermines the rule of law. And he does not respect at all the views of local law enforcement who say if people who are undocumented believe that the local police will turn them over to ICE, then they'll never report a crime, they will never testify against a defendant. They will become invisible. And that is actually worse. But Jeff Sessions, he's just, you know, got that righteous streak, and he is going to push as hard as he can. Now, the other misdirect that Trump uttered in, I think, less than 2 minutes was he was asked if he's willing to be interviewed by the special counsel, Bob Mueller. And he said, I'm looking forward to it, actually. And then, of course, he had to recite his mantra. There's been no collusion whatsoever. There's no obstruction whatsoever, and I'm looking forward to it. Then when asked if he would offer to give his testimony under oath, he first said, did Hillary go under oath for her interview with the FBI in July of 2016? And I find this fascinating because on the way in this morning, I listened to Rush Limbaugh for about 10 minutes. He was rambling on and on about how the Democrats can't let go of the 2016 election, and that's what Russiagate is all about. And he has a point there. But in his world, he doesn't even consider how obsessed Trump is with the election from which he was declared the winner and installed as president without any pushback from the Democrats, despite the obvious schemes that were used to try to rig the election. And so what we look at here is the fine print. Now, as he rambled on, Trump said, well, I'd love to do that. I'd like to do it as soon as possible, subject to my lawyers and all of that. That's why I consider this a misdirect, because Ty Cobb, the White House lawyer leading the response to Mueller's investigation, said, oh, Mr. Trump was speaking hurriedly. He only intended to say that he was willing to meet. He's ready to meet with them, Cobb said, but he'll be guided by the advice of his personal counsel, Cobb said, referring to himself. So these are meaningless statements from the president. They're lies. They're spin. They're bullshit. But the media swarms all over it and reports it as if it could be true because they want it to be true, I guess. And so Trump says he would appear under oath, but Ty Cobb probably will prevent that. And Anybody can imagine what a mess Trump would be if Mueller asks him some of these hair-trigger questions that produce a tirade and a lot of disinformation, if not outright deception, from Trump. Meanwhile, the Justice Department's Inspector General says he has recovered 5 months of missing text messages. They've been missing since over the weekend. And some of them relate to the lovebirds who worked at the FBI, Peter Strzok, and lawyer Lisa Page. And one of the more recently tantalizing tidbits released by the Republicans who've written this secret memo that hasn't been published yet was that one of the messages referred to a secret society. Now, you can cherry-pick that. And you think about the deep state, you think about the inner chamber of the top ranks of the FBI and how they may have colluded against Trump. It's entirely possible. In fact, I consider it more likely than Trump colluding with the Russians, based on the evidence that we have so far. And so there is a real frenzy frothing up in Washington right now, as the Democrats have written their own secret memo. And they want it distributed to every member of the House the way the Republican Intelligence Committee members ordered theirs distributed last week. But oh, has this produced a lot of blowback? And it gets a little complicated here. But the Republican memo apparently is based on top secret intelligence that was only viewed by some people who told Devin Nunes, the Republican chair of House Intel, about it. And then it was inserted into this memo. Now, because it accuses the FBI of malfeasance, essentially lying to the FISA court in order to get the warrants and using the dossier written by Chris Steele to support the request for a warrant, there is some very interesting stuff that could come out of this. But we can't trust either of these partisan players, because they are angling along specific message points, trying to, on the Republican side, exonerate Trump, and on the Democratic side, trying to promote the unproven Trump-Russia narrative. So the Republican memo, written by Nunes' staff, is said to claim that the FBI abused its powers under the FISA law to spy on the Trump campaign. Now, all of this could be cleared up, and I hope you're not too tired of me saying this, but Trump has the authority to declassify anything he wants at any time. And he could easily just give us the dates of the FISA hearings, the warrant requests, because we're now being told that it was in the fall of 2016 that the FBI went to the FISA court in order to get the warrant on Carter Page, a relatively low-ranking Trump campaign guy. And if we knew the date, and if we could see the application for the FISA warrant, even if they redact some of that top secret stuff, you know, that's so sensitive. And at this point, who are we kidding? The idea that we have these sensitive sources and methods, and that's why we've got to have total secrecy on the evidence about Trump-Russia, Russia hacking the DNC, that whole line of theory, that whole conspiracy theory. And so it's truly maddening that they're playing these games with us about, you know, what is secret and what isn't. And then we come upon this alleged secret society that could have been an honest reference or could have been a joke. We don't have the context for it. And so it's very dangerous to reach any conclusions at this time. And the Nunes memo led Dianne Feinstein, the very senior senator of California, to write a joint letter to Facebook and Twitter saying that they had heard reports that release the memo, which is a hashtag for the Republican side of this, was being retweeted by Russian bots. Now, I don't know what they based that on, but that is another, astounding claim that suggests that these people, Feinstein and Adam Schiff, the House Intelligence Democrat ranking member, that they believe that Russia is, you know, actively involved on a day-to-day basis in trying to, you know, roil the waters in American politics. And regarding the Republican memo, Glenn Greenwald said, "It's just so bizarre to watch Republicans calling for releasing the memo as though the power to release it is with the within the hands of anyone other than themselves. I mean, they're holding a document that only they can release while pretending to be advocating for its release. It's a bizarre spectacle." So, who knows where this goes from here. But yesterday we mentioned that Chris Wray, the newly minted FBI director, was resisting pressure from Jeff Sessions to clean house of Comey holdovers. That he had even threatened to resign if Sessions continued the pressure. Well, he hasn't resigned, and he's replacing two top dogs. One is the counsel for the FBI, general counsel, Dana Bente, the former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia, who is a Republican darling. He's going to be plugged in there at the FBI, and Ray is bringing over a chief of staff who used to work for him when he was in private practice. But let me invite you to listen to a two-minute clip here from Masha Gessen. Gessen is a Russian national, now exiled to the United States, a journalist who's been critical of Putin and critical of Trump. And I've read some articles where she seems sympathetic to the Trump-Russia narrative. But listen to this commentary. As she says, you know, it wasn't Russians who elected Donald Trump, even if Mueller comes out with cold proof.
Russians didn't elect Donald Trump. Americans did. Many Americans would love to wake up one morning to find that the national nightmare that is Donald Trump is suddenly over. That while they were asleep, Special Counsel Robert Mueller uncovered incontrovertible evidence of Russian collusion. And that this evidence has made Trump disappear. For a clear majority of Americans, this would be a lovely way to start their day. It is also impossible. No matter how compelling the evidence that Mueller uncovers, there's no clear path to impeachment. Both houses of Congress are Republican, and the Republicans, for now, have no interest in removing a president that their constituents voted into office. So the Russian conspiracy, even if it is proven to exist, is no political magic bullet. It is, however, a magic bullet for the imagination. A large number of Americans are still incapable of wrapping their minds around the fact of the Trump presidency. How could he have happened to us? Perhaps he came from outer space. Or at least the Russians elected him. The problem with this idea is that it plunges us into the depths of conspiracy thinking that is perfectly symmetrical to the kinds of conspiracy thinking, like birtherism, that brought Trump into office. It also gets us out of the predicament of having to think about the fact that Americans elected Trump. Even in the unlikely event that the Mueller investigation produces clear evidence of consequential Russian influence on the election, we will learn only that Russia succeeded in influencing American public opinion. So it is American voters that we would do well to be thinking about now. Because no matter how you look at it, they still elected Donald Trump, and he's still president.
Now, I, of course, quibble with her premise. I think Trump was installed after a very sophisticated rigged election involving voter suppression, involving gaming of the tabulation in Michigan, very critically exposed there, and other factors as well, the free media time that all the networks gave him, on and on. But Masha Gessen's central point here, I think, is right on. And every day I pause for a second to thank the people who support my work here at the Peter B. Collins Podcast, listeners like you, who kick in $5 or $10 a month. And I've taken to inviting you to pause this podcast for a moment to take care of a little business. Trot on over to peterbcollins.com, click menu, click become a subscriber, it takes you to the sign-up page, and you can join illustrious people like Jens Ivan Nielsen, who lives on the island of Bornholm in Denmark And he's just reconnected. He just took out another annual subscription to support me. I really appreciate you, Jens. And he also sends me free verse in English that I find particularly interesting. Also, Terry Paris in the People's Republic of Berkeley just took out another subscription. I'm very, very appreciative of that. Then we got the Intrepid Faith Peoples, Benny Alto in Oregon. And I just really appreciate the support that people offer. So join them, will you please? PeterBCollins.com, and you can sign up for a subscription of any level that is comfortable for you and your budget. And while we're talking about money, my friend Roger Schuler and his wife Carol are in desperate straits, living in a flea bag motel in Missouri as they continue to fight the setbacks that they've endured for Roger's very good reporting about the swamp, the cesspool of injustice in the state of Alabama. So if you're able to help them, please visit their website. It is legalschnauzer.blogspot.com, and there's a PayPal button right at the top. Got another embarrassment for the Justice Department, but this one goes back to the Obama administration. A guy named Jeffrey Wirtgen was a high-stakes corporate fraud prosecutor, and he left last year. And on his way out the door, he took a bunch of sealed lawsuits that had been brought by whistleblowers against corporate entities. And this guy Wirtgen went to those corporations and offered to sell them the details of the whistleblower lawsuits and then defend them from them. With his expertise gleaned before he headed into the revolving door of the Justice Department and joined the Juice law firm, Aiken, Gump, Strauss, Hauer, and Feld. Well, Jeffrey Wirtgen has taken a guilty plea and faces sentencing here in San Francisco in March. And this story appeared today in the Washington Post, but we haven't seen a bit, at least I haven't, in the local media here, including the San Francisco Chronicle. Trump is in Davos, Switzerland. He's trying to mend fences with British Prime Minister Theresa May, and they are apparently trying to re-engage in an invitation to bring Trump to Britain sometime later this year. But he also had a love fest with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And he sat down with Bibi and praised, of course, his own decision to move the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem. And also that Mike Pence went there, and the Palestinians refused to meet with Pence because they don't believe the U.S. is any kind of an honest broker anymore. Not that it has been for a long time, but it's very clear to them now. And Trump views that as disrespect, and he's threatening to further cut refugee funding that flows to the Palestinians from American contributions to the UN Refugee Agency. And he's just acting like an arrogant bully, which is the perfect behavior to mirror his buddy Bibi Netanyahu. And the New York Times talks about it this way. Trump repeated his assertion that recognizing Jerusalem would take the dispute over the city off the table for peace negotiations, an assertion that has puzzled European, Arab, and many American political leaders and diplomats. And he added again that Israel will pay for getting that concession up front, which apparently made Netanyahu squirm, but he kept that happy face on. Also, while we're talking about Israel, The Intercept and Robert Mackey, report that Michael Oren, the former U.S. Ambassador for Israel, who is now the senior official in charge of diplomacy, has been mocked in recent days because he admitted to the Israeli newspaper Haaretz that following the arrest of the 16-year-old Palestinian girl Ahed Tamimi, who slapped back an Israeli soldier. Keep in mind, if you watch the full video, she didn't slap him first. But that's the way it has been excerpted. At any rate, there is this internet conspiracy theory that claims that the Tamimis are not a real family, but a troop of actors paid to pretend that the occupation of their land on the West Bank upsets them. And so Michael Oren said that he told Haaretz that he suspected that members of the family were chosen for their appearance, an apparent reference to the fair hair and skin of the Tamimi daughter, Ahed, who is 16, and her brother, Mohammed. And then He critiqued their clothing. They looked too American. They wear jeans and T-shirts and backward baseball caps. He said it's what's known as Pallywood. And Pallywood is Palestinian linked to Hollywood. That's a new term for me. At any rate, Michael Oren is a Zionist idiot, and he proved it again in this little episode. The Independent in England has published the results of a new investigation that shows the origins of weapons used by the Islamic State in Syria and Iraq that were supplied by the U.S. and Saudi Arabia. Well, they exceeded far beyond the number of weapons that they would have been able to grab from the various factions that we armed against the Islamic State and the Assad government in Syria during this protracted civil war. Iraq and Syria have seen ISIS forces use large numbers of weapons supplied by states such as Saudi Arabia and the U.S. against the various international anti-ISIS coalitions that the two states supported. The U.S. and Saudi-supplied weapons were all manufactured in European countries, and Washington and Riyadh had broken contractual clauses prohibiting their transfer. Evidence collected indicates that the U.S. has repeatedly diverted EU-manufactured weapons and ammo to opposition forces in the Syrian conflict. ISIS forces rapidly gained custody of significant quantities of this material. So they're not disputing that some of it was grabbed from the proxy fighters that we were supporting. But not all of it. And there's some interesting questions there. Bill Richardson, he's been the governor of New Mexico, UN ambassador, a member of Congress. And I actually have spent a little time with him when he was governor of New Mexico. We had a family reunion in Santa Fe, and he invited me and 11 members of my family to come to his office and spend an hour. And I found him an interesting and engaging guy. I don't agree with him on every policy position, but personal scandal prevented him from rising to run for president again. Recently, Bill Richardson was serving on a panel investigating the displacement of Rohingya, the Muslim minority, in the nation of Myanmar. And Richardson has noisily resigned from that panel and taken swipes at Daw Aung San Suu Kyi, the Nobel Prize-winning leader of Myanmar. "She has developed an arrogance of power," he said. "I've known her a long time. I'm fond of her, but she basically is unwilling to listen to bad news, and I don't want to be part of a whitewash." He said at one point she exploded at him when he raised the detention of two Reuters journalists. "Her face was quivering, and if she had been a little closer to me, she might have hit me. She was so furious." And he went on to say his objectives in joining this board were to try to be helpful, sort out real long-term policy solutions, but I discovered that this board was being used as a cheerleading squad for the government. "I hope this will be a wake-up call for her. She is in a bubble where she has people always telling her how great she is. She's in the classic situation that politicians and leaders get themselves in when they don't want to listen to bad news and they have sycophants around them, who don't want to tell them the real situation." In Brazil, the corruption scandals continue to roil the system there, and the comeback, the attempted comeback of former President Lula da Silva is now set back by an appellate court that not only refused to overturn his corruption conviction, but they tossed an extra couple of years onto his prison sentence. He, of course, will appeal, but sadly, Brazil will remain mired in rudderless leaders, all of whom are tainted by corruption. AT&T was one of the entities that pushed hard for the FCC to pull the plug on net neutrality. And yesterday, they launched a new campaign with full-page ads in major newspapers calling for a new Internet Bill of Rights. Now, on the face of it, this may sound good. But AT&T's idea of a Bill of Rights is a little different from Internet activists. And Gigi Sohn, an advisor to former FCC Chair Tom Wheeler, who imposed the net neutrality rules, says, well, among other things, the company has led the charge to repeal the Wheeler FCC's strong ban policy privacy rules and rules protecting Americans with landline phones. promoted state laws that banned communities from building their own broadband networks, and, of course, a central player in the FCC's recent repeal of its network neutrality rules and the agency's abdication of its role protecting consumers and competition. Make no mistake about it, she said, any Internet Bill of Rights supported by AT&T will leave the FCC powerless, net neutrality and privacy protections weak, and consumers and competition left out in the cold. The president of Michigan State University made the right call, but a couple of years too late. Luana K. Simon has resigned under pressure over the way she handled the scandal of Dr. Larry Nassar, who is being sent to prison for over 100 years for his serial molestation of members of the gymnastics team, including the Olympic team. Bernie Sanders took the opportunity of the government shutdown over the weekend to meet with his top political advisors to talk about 2020. He hasn't made a decision, but of course is leaning toward it. I will note that Bernie does not support impeachment of this president at this time, and I think that's something he needs to address. Oprah has said she won't run. Thanks. I am linking to an op-ed published in the San Francisco Chronicle today by Supervisor Hillary Ronan, who explains why she voted the other day to replace the interim acting mayor of San Francisco, an African-American woman named London Breed, with a white male venture capital guy for the short term. And she explained the same rich white men who steered the policies that have created the mess we are in today are firmly behind the candidacy of London Breed. They have been bullying people to support the board president's run for mayor, including threatening people's careers if they don't support her. The majority of your elected representatives on both sides of the aisle felt that we couldn't stay silent and allow these men to continue to buy our elections. And then she goes on to praise the diversity of the four people running for mayor. And I think that this is an outbreak of democracy in a city where backroom deals have too long controlled local politics. And finally today, Trevor Noah made a joke last night about how, you know, it's not the Russians, it's Americans who hack our elections, and he focused on gerrymandering in Pennsylvania. Well, one of the positions in state government that can often enhance gerrymandering and other voter suppression schemes is the Secretary of State. And the left-leaning ballot access group iVote has announced it will spend at least $5 million in swing states to elect Democrats as secretaries of state. Their targets are Arizona, Colorado, Iowa, Michigan, Nevada, New Mexico, and Ohio. At this point, New Mexico is the only of those one of those states with a Democratic secretary of state. Hey, thanks for listening to my daily news and comment podcast. You're free to share it with absolutely everyone, and you can find it on YouTube. I'm Peter B.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.